CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no? The Biltmore Cabaret is your home for great live music in Vancouver.
October is sure to be a busy month at the Biltmore. On October 6th, catch bands Hallow Moon, The Bleeding Hearts, and Pineapple, a supergroup featuring members of the SSRIs, Portage in the Main, and Prairie Cat. October 21st, jam out with Daydream Vacation, indie rocker Zeus, and local favorites Sun Wizard. For fans of the New Pornographers, you won't want to miss band member Catherine Calder and special guest Anime Bell on October 27th. To round out your month, October 29th brings the band Nurses all the way up from Portland to share the stage with Dominant Legs.
For more information on these and other shows, including how to get tickets, visit BiltmoreCabaret.com.
Change the scheme, alter the mood. Electrify the boys and girls, if you'd be so kind.
This can't be good. What am I supposed to do?
Sunglasses.
Here they come.
And it's Queer FM Arts. It's Queer FM Community. Oh my goodness. It's
Are you confusing the shows again?
I am confusing the shows again. My name's Aiden Saint. We're here. It's Sunday afternoon. Actually, it's Sunday evening. And it's been Halloween weekend.
Yes, it has.
I'm here with
Justin Saint.
And of course,
Samantha Mac.
Samantha's sounding kind of tired. So Samantha, what have you been up to? Because I can only imagine. I sent her a thing. I know she was kidding, but I sent her a thing. I said, hey, we're off to the radio show. And she says, I'm running a little behind. Where are my clothes? Just kidding. So tell us, you have had a very, very, very busy week.
I have.
Let's see. You've done all kinds of your normal like 15 shows a week or whatever. But you also saw something very cool.
You're going to need to be way more specific than that.
Oh, come on. The coolest thing you've seen this week. Arguably.
I did get a new mirror.
Okay.
Oh, you're talking about that strongest man in the world.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, yes, that little fellow. He kept me up all night.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. So tell us, because we're going to, we have so much to talk about, so many cool things going on for Queer FM Community, and then in our next 2 hours after that, Queer FM. But the coolest thing ever was this really amazing...
The Great Orbex.
So what happened?
Well, it all started last weekend when I was working on a project called Bloodworks, which is a film that was in a Halloween horror competition, which screened just a few days ago on Thursday at the Rio Theater. In this film, a bunch of random people from Vancouver got thrown together to make a movie. And the great Orbex and his brother Sweet Pepper Klopex were actors with myself. And I met these fellow thespians. And it turns out that they run a sideshow. Not only do they run a sideshow, they are the most famous sideshow, and they are featured at the Peony at Fright Nights. Not only that, but they are both in the Guinness Book of World Records. And the great Orbex has just beaten the record for towing a 9,000-pound truck.
More than 9,000.
9,000 pounds.
9,000. That's a lot.
9,000 pounds over 100 meters. And he beat that record by going 111 meters and, was it 70 centimeters?
Yeah, I think so. We were there, actually, and we Twittered the hell out of it. And
we did.
Lots of video, lots of Twitter, lots of cool pictures. You can check that out at Queer FM Vancouver. Or Queer FM Van on Twitter and Queer FM Vancouver's page on Facebook, and The Samantha Mac on Twitter and Facebook.
And YouTube.
And YouTube.
And YouTube.
It's
YouTube.
The real Samantha Mac on YouTube, unfortunately.
Oh, yes, it's now
so
the
Samantha
real Samantha. Samantha
was working hard on this video, so you can actually see the...
Yeah, you can see the hooks in the back. Yeah. You can see the blood pouring down his back and into his sneakers. Yeah. You can see the truck being pulled. And in the back of the truck, there's four clowns dancing and cheering him on. You can see his brother Sweet Pepper doing the LMFAO shuffle to encourage him to keep pulling forward. You can see the mass amount of media that was there getting in the way. You can see the really stupid cameraman who held up the pull rope because he's an idiot. You can also see
He held up the pull rope. Didn't they have Guinness people watching to make sure that
it costs a lot of money to fly the Guinness World Book record people out here, so we had to videotape the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there were a lot of stupid cameramen there, not gonna lie.
Now there was the one guy I didn't see this, so you'll have to fill me in, but didn't one of the media people actually jump on the back of the truck in the last 20 meters
because he wanted to get the perfect shot? So he jumped on the back of the truck to get an overhead shot, not realizing that he was adding 300 pounds to what this man was pulling through two meat hooks shoved through the flesh of his back.
It was the thing for me, which was really interesting, was I got to use an iPad 2 to film the side view of this, which was really interesting. But the most interesting thing for me watching this, besides the amazing work, of Russ Fox from The Fall Tattoo and his brother in helping him and, driving him on, the great Orbex, actually, really nice guy. They're both very, very intelligent. In fact, have advanced degrees, and they're musicians, and they're just kind of all around.
Oh, they're amazing.
Really amazing guys. But the thing that I found astounding was the sheer amount of media from all around the world that covered it, because it is Vancouver. But the little Japanese journalist that was just this little tiny thing, she was maybe 5 foot tall, maybe. And she got about 3/4 of the way along this run. They have a guide rope, and he's literally kind of pulling himself along and then dragging this truck behind him. And she bounced into me a couple of times. And then the third time, she kind of bounced into me, and she has her little hand over her mouth and looks like she's going to hurl at any moment. And she just runs away. And it was like, yeah, wow, yeah, this is kind of, kind of a little not for the faint of heart, for sure. But that actually made my... I don't know why. I took pleasure in someone suffering, but...
The Germans have a name for that.
Oh, what's that?
Schadenfreude.
Really?
It's an avenue cue. They've turned it into a song.
Oh, I'm sure we'll be playing it later, knowing you. So we've got a lot of really great stuff coming up. We have one of our candidates for Vancouver City... for Vancouver School Board is coming in to chat with us. It is getting to political season. It's going to be really interesting. We're going to try to get a number of different candidates and people through to talk about the various issues and the things that are going on in elections. We have him at 5:30. So Jason will be in. We're going to talk to him. We have interviews. One of our youth broadcasters for community went to West Side Story.
And she's already Twittering about it.
So. Ah, well, the lovely Jasmine. She's put this together, so we've got a little file here for Jasmine, and mm-hmm. we're going to put that on right now. This is Queer FM Community. This is Jasmine, and what happened when she went to see West Side Story.
Hey there, my name is Jasmine Kahn, and I'm here to do a little review of the opera-infused musical West Side Story, a worldwide musical extravaganza. The main storyline of the musical is based on the original conceptions of Jerome Robbins, a well-known actor-director who has created many plays and movies including West Side Story, Peter Pan, and Fiddler on the Roof. This play is filled with the good and the cruel and the ugly events of the late 50s, including the fight for survival between gangs, the struggles of an interracial relationship, and the horrific events driven by racially stemmed anger. What I really liked about the show was the fact that the music was just perfect. It was a live orchestra that was playing out every single scene. And there's very rare times when there was no music playing at all. The choreography was astounding, with every actor hitting every beat of the music. I really could not say that I disliked anything about the show. I went with my mother. This was her birthday gift. Happy birthday, Mom. And she even personally, being somebody who has seen plays before, said that she could not find anything wrong with this play. She loved it just as I did, and I think it was perfectly done. It was amazing, and it was definitely one of the highlights of my year so far, because I've never seen something this amazing. I cannot particularly say that there's anything I disliked about the show. I personally didn't like the fact that there is sexism involved, but then again, this is the more realistic part of it. I completely understand it, because it really did mimic what it was like to be in the 50s. The two main actors, Tony and Maria, they did stand out like any of the main actors are supposed to. Personally, though, I have to say that West Side Story is like the Manhattan Gang version of High School Musical. Now, I know lots of people would probably get upset at me for saying this, but Maria is Gabriella, Tony is Troy. Like, I mean, I'm not kidding. I now look at, and obviously West Side Story was made before High School Musical, and I personally have to say, I think now High School Musical was a cheap knockoff version, the PG version of West Side Story. My favorite scenes were the girl-to-girl scenes where all the girls were able to talk about their loves and their future, and I found it very interesting how, in reality, back in the 1950s, when the girls were to get together and talk about the boys that they liked, especially in very racially driven areas, the girls were still able to say that they would like to date a American boy. And I found that very interesting, and I found the fact that it probably was exactly how it happened back in the 1950s. Girls who were Hispanic, Latin American, would usually crush and or want to date American boys. And I found this very admiring, the fact that the boys can't say that they want to be with white girls, but the girls can easily say they want to be with American boys. It was just a very interesting thing, and one of my favorite scenes was when all the girls were talking about how they wanted to one day get together with different boys, and one of them was kind of just like, I want to go back to Puerto Rico, please. And it was an amazing dance number, too. The lighting and the staging was just phenomenal. I've never seen a stage that elaborate in my life. They used the perfect lighting to make the ground texture look different each scene. I have really got to say that the lighting was amazing. In certain dance scenes where it was just two characters, the lighting was so that it was to almost shadow onto the backdrop. And I found that very interesting how they use both shadowing from both perspectives, from both sides of the screen, so that not only would the audience be getting a certain shadow from them, but also the screens and the backgrounds of the stage would be getting a shadow from the dance moves and the dance numbers, and I really like that idea too. Scene changes were amazing. I don't think I've ever seen a stage shift from inside in a bedroom to outside on the field so quickly. It was just an amazing stage crew, stage setup in general. Amazing. I really like the idea of having the mix of opera and musical theater, because personally, I can't put up with both by themselves. With this, it was very much more musical theater driven, yet there's many different songs in it where opera was involved, with the character Maria, and her Puerto Rican voice was very... It was very Latin American, it was very Latin, and I really liked the fact that she could just belt it out. She was able to make the audience just stop and stare at her while she sung. I love how there's a perfect mix between slow songs, fast songs, opera, and just regular, good old hearty American music. It was definitely an amazing night, and I will not forget it anytime soon. I absolutely cannot stress how much I would love it if everyone went and saw it. It is definitely worth going to see. Again, thank you so much for listening. My name is Jasmine Khan. If you'd like to hear and or see more of me, make sure to go check me out on my YouTube, which is youtube.com/JasmineKhan. I do have a Twitter, and I am also a part of Queer FM community, so make sure to tune in. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you like my review of West Side Story.
This upscale pub, featuring lots of dark wood, a cool bar with your favorite ales on tap, and friendly servers, is a great place to hang with friends or to, maybe, make a new one. If you've only got time to stop in for a quick lunch, you'll be happy to see the menu featuring standard pub fare at reasonable prices. Sit inside or head out to the covered patio to indulge in one of the best things about Davy Street: cruising. Or, for you shy types, people watching.
The Fountainhead Pub at 1025 Davy Street. Open Sunday to Thursday from 11 a.m. to midnight.
Or drop by from Friday to Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. Cheers.
This is Justin Saint, and you're listening to Queer FM on CITR 101.9 FM. And I've just come back from West Side Story by Vancouver Opera. I was really, really jazzed when they finally announced that they were going to be doing West Side Story. Why? Bernstein, when he wrote West Side Story, kind of redefined musical theater in some cases, because he had been doing a mixture of operettas and musical theater at the time. And with West Side Story, he created a score that was kind of, at the time, a bit more demanding than what, you know, what most musical theater actors would have had to sing. And the score really, especially for the leads, Tony and Maria, they're almost as if they were designed for classically trained singers. And let's just say, it's a really good fit. Now, West Side Story also has a really, really strong dancing element. Pretty much everyone who knows West Side Story is familiar with the ever-popular figure of gangs who like to dance ballet through streets. So, I had never seen West Side Story on stage before, and let me tell you, the dancing gangs totally, totally translates on the stage medium. On film, it's kind of iconic, and, you know, it's pretty, but it doesn't make sense. Like, why the hell are these guys dancing ballet through these back alleys? It just doesn't make sense. On stage, it totally works. And with the impressive score, it just really adds to it altogether. I had the privilege of seeing West Side Story with Colin Fu. Colin Fu is a local Vancouver actor. He is the first Asian-Canadian actor to be nominated for a Leo Award. So he had a few things to say about the show as well. He actually saw the Broadway production back in the 70s. And according to him, the play does stay true to the original feel of the Broadway production, except for some parts where they tried to modernize it a little bit. And I kind of felt the same thing as well. The actors were doing some gestures that I think were a little too modern for the time, and that kind of threw things off. The other thing that was kind of off was the balance between the male and the female actors. There was quite a significant number of males on the stage, but the number of female actors was a bit lacking, and it took away from the strength of some of the two more iconic numbers in the piece, America and I Feel Pretty. Everyone knows that one, right? I Feel Pretty. America in the movie is done as kind of a thing by the Puerto Ricans as a boys versus girls thing. In the play, it's actually just the girls. It's one girl who wants to go back to Puerto Rico and be all famous because she's an American girl now, and all the other girls have kind of settled in and don't really want to go back there. They had only about five girls doing that piece, and you know, the girls were phenomenal. The dancing was amazing, and Anita, played by Cleopatra Williams, is phenomenal as a dancer. Like, they did a lot of kicks and jumps, and they were still belting and hooting and cheering, and it was a lot of fun, a lot of fun. They just could have had used more girls. The same thing for I Feel Pretty. The entire song, I Feel Pretty, is done around this one bed, and this scene just wasn't big enough for such an iconic number. The other issues I found with the show, and Colin did as well, the lighting. The lighting did not really change from scene to scene, except for the one scene where Tony and Maria kind of dream about their future. Then it totally changes. But for the rest, there is no transition between scenes. The thing that Colin and I did disagree on, though, was the song Tonight. In the song Tonight, it's the iconic balcony scene. Tony and Maria have their own places on these two separate moving staircase platforms. And for the start of the scene, the staircases are kind of directed towards the audience. So while they're singing, Maria and Tony are actually, though they're supposed to be singing to each other, the actors are actually singing to you. Now, Colin found that really weird, and he said that, you know, they should have been singing to each other, because that makes more sense. For me, I actually quite like it, because first they're singing to you, and then their eyes finally meet for the first time when they start singing the main part of Tonight. And for me, that, you know, there was just that moment of, that breathtaking, you know, moment of theater magic that, you know, theater geeks like me just live for. The leads, played by Tony, was played by Colin Ainsworth, and Maria was played by, I hope I'm saying this right, Lucia Casaloni. And Colin, oh my god, what a phenomenal tenor. Really, really gorgeous, beautiful tenor voice. It was perfect, especially his first number. His voice just glided through those notes like butter. It was gorgeous, and I have to say, this score really is made to be sung by operatic singers. It was just amazing, and Lucia, oh my god, she, for the entire production, her voice was so strong, so clear. Colin said it was just like a bell. And it was just so rich. It's like you could feel every note. And she didn't need a mic. And she's a trained opera singer, she did not need a mic. But with a mic, it was absolutely phenomenal. For the rest of the cast, now there is a big difference between the cast and the show, because it is quite clear who the professional opera singers are and who the musical theater / dancers are. The musical styles are definitely, definitely very, very distinct. So besides the two leads, there is only one distinct opera singer in the cast. The rest pretty much are musical theater actors and dancers. It kind of felt like you were watching two different shows in the first act. The Jets and the Sharks would have their very dancey musical theater feeling like numbers, and then Tony and Maria would do their really romantic, beautiful opera ballads together. That, the flow didn't work as well for me. At the end, near the end though, Maria and Anita, they have a duet together, and the stark contrast between Maria's operatic voice and Anita's musical theater voice added, really, really added to the song. And personally, I found that that was one of the best parts of the show, hands down. The other really, really good part of the show is the nonstop dancing. Oh my god. West Side Story does call for a lot of dancing, and the actors hired by Vancouver Opera do not miss a beat. There were a lot of really recognizable names from the local Vancouver theater scene. So we had Vincent Tong, Robin Wong, Stephen Greenfield, and even Mr. Terrell Witherspoon from the Homorazzi Gang. Hey, Terrell. Terrell plays Baby John, and we finally got to see his acting chops. So here's a shout-out for you, Terrell. You're awesome. So, final thoughts. West Side Story by Vancouver Opera was definitely worth seeing. The next show they're doing is Romeo and Juliet, and that's happening in November, so stay tuned because we'll have tickets to see for that. If Vancouver Opera does do more musical theater, Vancouver Opera does bring higher caliber theater to Vancouver. So the more musical theater stuff they do, here's a hint, I really want to see Candide. It's also by Bernstein. Oh, and also as a side note, I really appreciate surtitles for non-English productions because, you know, I don't really speak anything besides English and Tagalog. But, yeah, for English shows, when the actors might miss a line or things aren't really going, you know, along with the show, not really that effective. It's more distracting more than anything. So, yeah, something you might want to keep in mind, Vancouver Opera. You can check out more Vancouver Opera stuff on vancouveropera.ca, and you can check out our stuff on queerfmvancouver.com. And I'd like to happily announce that we have a new weekly newsletter, and you can sign up for that on our website. You can keep up to date with what's going on in town and any ticket giveaways we're doing, and, you know, any events that we happily promote on the show. So if you want easy access to that, it's all online. We link you to all the websites, give you all the info, even provide you with the ticket information in case you really wanted to go, but, you know, you just didn't know if you had to go to Ticketmaster or Ticket Tonight or whatever. It's all on there. So please support us. We also have our like page on Facebook. That's Queer FM Vancouver. Like us, follow us, tweet us. We love it when you do. So this is Justin Saint for Queer FM on CITR 101.9 FM.
This is Kay Tuckerman. I play Donna Sheridan in Mamma Mia, and you're listening to Queer FM on CITR 101.9.
When I hit stop, press rewind, take a little time, play back in my mind.
time, time.
I'm letting go.
You just heard Tyrell Witherspoon. He's one of our favorites here on Queer FM. He's part of homoerazi.com. He's also one of the fantastic performers at West Side Story. You should check that out because, well, he's gorgeous, talented, amazing, really cool person. So we're just shouting out to Tyrell. Hey, how you doing? Well, we have it's coming up to political season, and we're getting ready to vote here in Vancouver. Now, one of the cool things, because I'm a techno geek just like my husband Justin, we're both kind of checking out this Vancouver Votes app. Yes, there's an app for that. And one of the really fantastic things is when you're doing an interview with someone who's actually running for an office, you can bring up their whole profile right there on your iPad.
It's all on my iPod.
Yeah, so, yeah. He's got the iPod. We have an iPhone in here. We got the whole contingent. So, hey, my name's Aiden Saint. We have Justin Saint and the Samantha Mack. And we have one of the guys that we kind of like. His name's Jason. Now, is it pronounced Jason LaMarche? Hey. So, we're working on headphone difficulties. Jason LaMarche is running for Vancouver City Council. And besides that, he's got a really killer website, and all of his issues are really easy to find. And they scroll and everything. It's really cool. There was a slight, what I call a tempest in a teapot thing that we're going to talk about in the media. And but unlike a newspaper, we here in radio, we get a chance to actually hear from the person as opposed to filtered through an editor. So you get a chance to actually hear from the candidate who, some of his issues, some of the things he's passionate about and everything else. And let's see, we're going to turn this mic slightly.
Hello, hello.
Hey, and there is Jason LaMarche. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks, Aiden.
Well, so, I gotta give you props for the website.
Oh.
Very cool.
Throw it together myself.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Of course. it's like, oh, yeah, that whole thing. Yeah, I just tossed it on. So you have seemingly a lot of experience in the business community and a lot of issues you're passionate about. One of the things that we have to talk about immediately, however, it's at the bottom of your bio here on Vancouver Votes, and that was you were a sponsored skateboarder.
Yes, I was. I was, yeah, for a long time.
Sponsored by who?
I rode for Circa Footwear. I rode for West Beach, a skate shop that used to be on 4th, and I had my own skateboard company that I rode for, and I had a board sponsor out of Ottawa. Just a bunch of different things.
Wow.
Excellent.
It was fun.
Yeah, yeah. Sam's just going.
Where did you compete?
I went to Tampa, Florida. I think I came in second last place. That was a very complicated course, and it was, wow. That's when I realized I was never going to be a pro skateboarder. I better start getting into politics.
Well, you're more well-spoken than a few of the skateboarders that I've encountered.
Oh, wow.
There's so much athleticism and balance in even just being able to get on a skateboard, let alone being able to be good enough to be sponsored. So, kudos to you, because that's something, yeah, can't do it.
Yeah, no.
To the thing at hand, when did you decide you wanted to run for Vancouver City Council?
I had wanted to run for office for several years. I began getting involved in politics about 7 years ago, mostly at the federal level, then provincial. And it's funny because the more you learn about politics, the more it draws you into local issues. And eventually I found myself with the biggest passion and the biggest interest in municipal issues. And looking back on my personal history, It was the involvement of working with the city of Vancouver to build the skateboard plaza under the Georgia Viaduct.
Right.
That kind of sparked an interest in working with the government on things.
Yeah.
And realizing that if you worked with officials, you could actually get stuff done. Like, wow, this system works if you play a part in it.
Right.
And so I'm 34 years old now, and when I started thinking more about the upcoming election, I said, you know what, I'm going to put my name forward because I have a lot of experience in working in municipal issues, and I have a wealth of political experience, and I started my first corporation when I was 23, so I have a long history of business experience, and I want to bring all that to Vancouver with my passion for really engaging and talking to people about issues.
Yeah.
And that was just, there you go, I'm running.
Well, and it's funny the path that you take to get into politics. I
totally.
We'll talk. Now you've got a couple of different issues here on your website, and I wanted to kind of talk about some of them if some of the people out there weren't aware of them. One of the things that was really striking was the first thing on your list is attack the policy, not the person.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Someone being genteel in politics? This is Canada? Oh, right. This is Canada. We'll get to this later, the whole thought of someone was making a big deal out of something that you had written, and I was sitting there, I tweeted about this, and I said, really? Wow, you've never dealt with American politicians, have you? I mean, you didn't run the car into Lake Chappaquiddick. No one was killed. There wasn't, it's like there wasn't 14 mistresses. I mean, seriously?
No. So
how did this come about? Attack the policy, not the person.
Okay, well, what had happened is I was at an all-candidates debate about half a week ago, and during the intermission, a reporter from CTV came up and talked to me and said, hey, how are you doing? You're running for office. I was, well, yeah, I am. How are things going? It's like, well, fantastic. I'm meeting all these people, and I'm learning so much, and really getting my message out to the community. And he says, oh, great, great, great. So you studied commerce, right? I was like, well, yeah, I did. That's kind of random for him to know that about me. And he's like, oh, well, do you remember writing this? And he whips out this piece of paper with something I had written back in 2007. And, of course, the video camera's on my face right there for the reaction.
Of course.
And I kind of laughed. I was like, it was so random. I was just, haha, oh, wow, that thing. Okay, yeah. It was a spreadsheet, an Excel spreadsheet that I had written on a blog I used to run. And the blog was called The Business Student.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a commerce student.
Yeah.
And basically what it was a ranking system where you could determine who you wanted to date based on various criteria.
Okay.
All right. So that spreadsheet, I called it the date matrix.
Mm-hmm.
It was a matrix for dating. One of the criteria that they honed in on was blown out of proportion to make it a sensationalistic news story where there was nothing to talk about. I mean, all the other criteria on my list, the first one was, is the person intelligent?
Yeah.
That's number one.
And, that is a conversation between, relationships is important, I think.
Yeah. I mean, are they intelligent? Are they trustworthy? Are they not materialistic? And number eight on the list was, are they good in bed? If I don't know, guess. And that was okay. The one he threw in my face. And it caught me off guard. And, someone had leaked that to the media.
Mm-hmm.
And that evening, it aired on CTV News. And a lot of the paid staff in Vision Vancouver were then trying to seed this into the internet to make it a big deal.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And just posting the same link 50 times over with feigned outrage.
Yeah.
And I thought nothing of it because I didn't write that article to offend anyone. It was a lighthearted take on dating.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, and it's not like for the listeners out there, I looked at this matrix and because it, I saw this come across and I'm going, okay, interesting, click. And it's generic. There aren't any names. There's no information. I mean, I'm sitting there looking at this, and it wasn't like a junior high school, thing where you're passing around a ranking system of all the girls in your class. It wasn't like that. I'm looking at this going, oh, this seems reasonable. Hell, this is better than anything I would have written.
And see, if it was given to most of the gay men I know, it would have been a lot more risque.
So
that's what happened. And the day after, I didn't think it was going to go anywhere, but the day after it got picked up by the Georgia Strait.
Right.
And then it got picked up by Global BC. And then it was airing on national news. And it turned into a national. It was the top story on CTV. I mean, How did that even... That's sad.
That is so awesome.
That's called a slow news day on a 24-hour news cycle is what that is.
Exactly.
That's okay. Incredible, though, that more people are concerned about whether or not the people you're dating are good in bed.
Well,
theoretically.
What I thought was really interesting is I'm looking at the province, and they had, you know, you can go on the internet and look. And I, again, let me be really clear on this. I'm going to give my opinion. My opinion is this is crap. Okay.
Yeah, the sense of humor.
You know, yeah, it's like, really? This is all you've got to, you know, to you know, get after this guy about who's you know, good-natured man who wants to run for, you know, city council. And all you got is a generic matrix about dating that was written, you know, how long ago? Really? The quote that I wanted to say here was Vision Vancouver's counselor, Jeff Meggs, said this. It's sort of laughable and pathetic as a member of the public, but it's a different story for someone running for public office. Okay, stop. You're all members of the public. If seriously, I mean, really, the worst thing that you're going to pin you know, Jason Marsh down for is something that's a light. Seriously. Really? I mean, you know, didn't catch him, you know, out on Maine and Hastings with, you know, hookers and blow. You didn't, you know, there wasn't a sex scandal. He didn't, you know, that's all you've got. Let's go back to the issues. Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. just like.
And so that's what I did. I went on CKNW and I took the incident very seriously because yeah. honestly, there might be some people that are genuinely offended. And I believe there probably are. And so,
of course,
because I want to serve everyone in Vancouver fairly and equally, I went on CKNW and I reiterated, I did not do this to offend anyone. If you were offended, I am genuinely sorry. And I committed to taking the website down, that post down in about a week.
Yeah.
Because I decided to leave it up for a longer time because A, I have nothing to hide about that.
Sure.
And B, what's being said in the media about that is so wildly different than what is actually written. I wanted people to go look for themselves and say, go
yeah.
look.
Yeah.
You know.
So wow, this is one of those things in a radio interview where I get to go, and moving on. Because, I mean, to be honest with you, Jason, I have to say, meh.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's I think it's actually more of a commentary on our 24-hour media cycle when the most important thing they have to talk about is this, when, I mean, really? There's yeah. so many other things to spend airtime on, and this is just so minor. Eh.
Yeah. See, in the Philippines, where I come from, we have to deal with, you know, politician problems like corruption. Like, I don't know, they're shipping off money that should be going to the poor in Sweden. No, here, it's like...
Yeah. Oh, and in the last week, if you want to even take it further, there was a big thing in the Obama administration in the United States, and they it turns out that their green energy policy, they decided to spend a lot of their money on winterizing homes. Well, it just so happens that, Vice President Biden's state had to stop the entire program because of, and I quote, gross mismanagement of funds. Apparently, even in Seattle, the program in a year spent hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know how many homes they winterized? Five.
Wow.
So let's keep our eyes on the ball, shall we, kids? I mean, you know, it's weird that Queer FM has to say keep your eye on the ball at CITR, but you know what? Oh, okay. I guess I'll take that mantle on. Hey, keep your eye on the ball. The election's coming up. We have serious problems. We need serious people to solve them. Your 15 minutes are up. Okay, so we're going to go on here. There's a couple of things that I think are really kind of amazing. Jason LaMarche supports a ban on retail dog sales in Vancouver, and this is having seen the Peanuts cartoons as a kid and the puppy farms and all that. Can you explain this for us?
Totally. I've had dogs half my life, and for the past 4 years, I actually am the co-producer of a dog show. I produced the West End Dog Show downtown, and so
my Mr. Aww. Muffin won that 1 year.
Oh my god, you were the lookalike.
Yes. Oh my god, that's like laminated on my fridge.
Oh my god. So that's my background in dogs. We raise money for the BC Guide Dog Services. And when I saw Richmond had put forward a motion to do that banning of retail sales, the same week I started a Facebook group And later, about a year later almost, when I decided to run for city council, I said, you know what? This is an issue I'm passionate about. It's a municipal issue. I'm going to put it forward.
Yeah.
Because I care about it. And I'm a dog owner. And well, there's, you know, there's over 100,000 dogs in Vancouver.
Oh, I'm aware of it. And fortunately, they're fairly well behaved. Haven't had a whole lot of incidents involving dogs in my boots. So, so how do you propose now, you know, in various cities I've lived, there have been similar sorts of measures. Vancouver is a little bit more progressive than some. How do you propose to get around how does this impact local businesses and...
Well, here's the clincher. When I did my press release, the magazine that was working with me on a bit of research for this project told me there was still one pet store in Vancouver that was selling the dogs. And after the story broke, it turns out that they had stopped selling dogs in the spring. So currently, there's zero businesses that are selling dogs in the city of Vancouver. However, this is a regional issue. So Richmond, when they passed it, three stores had to stop selling dogs. Right now in Vancouver, we have no stores that are selling dogs, but that just means we can play our leadership role in closing this link with zero economic impact because there's no stores that are selling them.
Fantastic.
Right.
And how does it – are there any puppy farms around in these
– From what I understand, I researched this quite a bit when Richmond was going through their initial phases, and a lot of the puppy mills are based in America, and so they get sent in – to Vancouver and sold at the retail level. So by passing this motion, Vancouver is going to say, we're not open for business to puppy mills. You know, get out of town.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Because, you know, there's a lot of really cute puppies and shelters all over Vancouver, and they deserve a home.
Exactly.
Well, and they really do. There's so many animals that are fantastic, and fantastic animals, and... New isn't always the best thing, you know, just because it's a puppy. Well, you know, we have all these other animals that really need a home. Come on, you know.
Yeah, save yourself the trouble of having to train them.
Oh, that's true.
Well, for some cases.
Yep.
And I'm curious, because we've been talking about dog shows and whatnot.
Right.
So tell us your story on this, Sam. So what happened? We only got like a snippet of a picture on refrigerator, and you guys, so tell us, what happened?
I think it was three dog shows ago?
Yeah.
Three dog shows ago. I live in the West End, just blocks from where they have the dog show, and I saw that there was a look-alike contest, and I thought, my dog and I look nothing alike, but he's got no chance of winning Fluffy or Softest or Waggiest Tail or anything like that, because he's a Rottweiler. So... I was like, what am I going to do? So Muffin wore a camouflage jacket, and I wore my camouflage pants. And then he wore his vest with a skull on it, and I wore my skull shirt. And then he wore his doggles, and I wore my big sunglasses. And we went to go be twin badasses. And we won.
And Jason's nodding. Apparently, mission accomplished.
They totally won. I remember that vividly. Yeah.
Yeah, and there were people who actually like looked like the dogs. Like this old lady with like crazy hair, and her dog had crazy hair. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna make people mad. But it worked, and I was really happy.
Sweet.
Well, we are gonna take a step aside for just a quick bit of radio business. Come back with Jason LaMarche. He's running for Vancouver City Council. We're gonna talk about the Taxpayers' Pledge and Occupy Vancouver, and we're gonna do it right after this.
Looking to connect with gay guys like yourself?
Did you know that the friendly neighborhood guys at Health Initiative for Men do more than just hand out condoms? Working with gay guys in your community, HIMS volunteers, nurses, and staff bring awareness to all aspects of gay men's health.
They also offer fitness and yoga classes, counseling and peer support, and even STI and rapid HIV testing through their sexual health center.
Check him out online for more information at www.checkhimout.ca. They're here to help you make the most out of your life.
This is Queer FM Community. We are here at CITR 101.9 FM. You can check out all the archives, all the fantastic stuff we have to offer every week on the Queer FM, all three shows at queerfmvancouver.com. You can get on our newsletter. We've got this really cool newsletter. We have a column with Barb Snellgrove called Van Bag. Hey, I did not choose that name. We also have all the news articles that Jennifer Breakspear and I bandy about weekly. Jennifer Breakspear, the executive director of community, she'll be in to talk politics and news, as always, and she's coming into the studio. So we're going to talk about that, and we've got a bunch of news articles, a bunch of really fantastic stuff coming up in the next 2 hours on Queer FM, but we're right now getting back to our guest, which is Jason LaMarche. He is running for Vancouver City Council. So Jason, you know, again, fantastic website. I'll give it out here. You can go to jasonlamarche.ca. That's jasonlamarche.ca.
Conversely, you can also go to electjason.ca.
Ooh, I like that one better.
That's a lot easier, right?
That's a good one.
Electjason.ca, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, on here, you have signed what's called the CFIB Taxpayers Pledge.
Yep.
And that's the Canadian Federation of Independent Business Tax Pledge. What is that?
Basically, it is an organization that lobbies on behalf of independent businesses for fair taxation and just to have governments show some spending restraint. I mean, it's interesting in the city of Vancouver, our capital plan has doubled in size over the last 10 years. That's articles are being written about the insane amount of spending, the rate of spending increases that are happening in municipalities, not just in Vancouver, but in BC in general. It's kind of a weird phenomenon that's happening right now.
Now, is it for infrastructure things, or is it sustainability, like parks, and is it schools? I mean, what seems to be the big culprit in some of these? Is there a trend? Is it just case by case?
I've talked to a lot of people that specialize in this, and they can't put their finger on it. So I think it's just a matter of the capital plan, the capital budget, pardon me, getting bigger over time. And really, at the end of the day, I don't think we've got double the services. We don't have double the police officers. We don't have double the firefighters. We don't have double the bus system. I mean, it's just spending. And there's a lot of question marks right now. I mean, if I'm elected to Vancouver City Council, one thing I want to do is open the books and look at the numbers and get the access to where the money's going. Because quite frankly, I couldn't really tell you.
Well, and that's the thing, even looking at the Vote Vancouver, you know, iPad app here, there's a lot of really interesting holes in the information, and that's one of them. It doesn't really tell you. It's got capital plan. I'm going to tap my iPad here. And it just says capital plan borrowing questions, which appear on side two of the ballot, are listed here in late October. Capital plan information will be available at vancouver.ca/vote. And there isn't that much there. That's the thing that I found really interesting. It's and we have transparency in the city, or supposed to. And it's just, and look, I'm actually kind of a fan of the mayor. I like, for the most part, what he's done. He's young. He does a lot of things for
attractive.
He does a lot of things for LGBTQ, causes. I sat next to the man for like an hour at one. You know, it's like, hey, that's the mayor, and that was my reaction. And like, oh, hey, how you doing? And we talked about the iPad, and and that was it. But it's the responsibility of the city council to work with the mayor and in some cases hold him accountable to, hey, okay, let's see the numbers, or let's get some dialogue going on this.
And that's part of what that pledge was that I signed. It's called the Taxpayers Pledge. So it's an optional thing that any council candidate can sign off on, and they're committing to three things when they do that. They're committing, one, to tax fairness, which is looking at the difference in property taxes that a residential business home would pay versus a commercial business. And, for example, if you have a home, you're paying X amount of property taxes. A business that owns a property, the same dimension, same everything, they're paying 4.5 times more. So that ratio is really out of whack. And that's why you would have, let's say, your local grocer going under, because you got to sell a lot of eggs and milk to make up for 4.5 times more property tax. So the better ratio is probably more closer to 2.5 at least. It used to be as high as 6, which is when the NPA brought it in.
Right.
When Gregor won, they continued it, and that's going again. So if elected, the NPA is going to adhere to tax fairness. Number two is to show municipal spending restraint. Try and scale back on this spending. I mean, we're spending too much. And three is transparency, openness, and accountability. And that's where the NPA was front and center in supporting the province in their calls for a municipal auditor general to have some type of oversight so that when you have a mayor and council, you at least have a second set of eyes to make sure you're on track and you're actually getting some kind of a value for what you're doing. And I think that should be just a basic expectation of every voter and every taxpayer. You'd want to make sure that your government is doing good things and is getting a good return.
Well, you know, we've always had oversights in the cities that I've lived up and down the West Coast, and it's you have your comptrollers and you have your oversight. Hell, they even had a full committee in Seattle for oversight. Not that it really helped, but they just went ahead and built the stadiums anyway. One last thing I wanted to talk about, because we're running out of time for Queer FM community, and that is Occupy Vancouver. You were down there on the 15th, last weekend, actually, or one weekend ago. How was that? What was your take on it, and what did you find out?
The whole Occupy movement is really interesting, and I've been following this since day one when it happened in New York. And as a politician, I'm very careful to make sure that I don't co-opt what they're doing. I don't speak for themselves. For them, I don't define what they're doing. I don't think that's my place. My place is to listen and to watch what's going on and to be accessible so people can approach me with their ideas. In Canada, everyone has the right to protest. That's in the charter. It's just non-negotiable. What we do have to consider is when someone's right to freedom to protest has an effect on someone else's right to live a peaceful life. And I don't know if we have a fair balance right now. The art gallery is a publicly owned piece of land owned by the province, and this group has set up a tent city which prevents other people from enjoying that space. And really the turning point for me was when the Occupy Vancouver Twitter account was promoting a couple hundred people to go around downtown and take over banks to protest inside of the banks.
Mm.
And so they did this at the TD Bank downtown. They were dancing on the counters. I mean, this is a very unorganized, unplanned. I think that's where it moves from legitimate protest to interfering with the life of someone else. And it introduces security concerns and all sorts of things. And the same thing for when some of the protesters joined the Missing Women's Inquiry and formed circles in the Granville and Georgia intersection and effectively shut down traffic downtown midday. And I don't know if that's fair either, because we have families that have to go to work and they have to make money to pay rent for their kids and their family. And I don't see that as being a fair balance right now. And I have no problem with protest. If people want to come back there every morning at 7 a.m. to say it all over again and to do that indefinitely, that's fine. But Jeff Meggs from Vision Vancouver has even said, you know, this tent city is violating city bylaws. And at some point, taxpayers and voters are going to have to say, how much do we want to spend policing this?
Mm-hmm.
And how much do we want to let a group of a couple hundred people supersede the rights of everyone else to enjoy a peaceful life?
Well, and some of my neo-hippie friends were Twittering and Facebooking on this subject and were appalled and astounded that people were being mean to them. And it's like, well, okay, after a few days, I'm with you on that. But after several weeks, it's like, at what point do the rest of us get tired of this? I'm not saying you can't protest. I'm totally for the protest mm-hmm. thing. But the amount of police manpower, we're talking about controlling spending. Well, guess what? They cost money. The cops have, and those police officers that are brought in to do that policing aren't policing other places that actually need police protection and vision. So I guess I'm at what point, it's weird for me because I consider myself liberal, but by the same token, it's like, okay, guys.
The longer you hold it out, less.
What's amazing is what happened in Oakland this last week, Oakland, California. They basically decided, okay, enough's enough, and unleashed the dogs and the tear gas and pushed them out.
Yeah,
and it's
from what I've seen with VPD, I think our culture in Vancouver is just incredibly different. And when we saw with the Stanley Cup riots, the amount of restraint that they were willing to show in those situations is really, I think, encouraging in their ability to manage this issue in the fairest possible way. But at some point, we have the mayor who said they can stay there indefinitely so long as it was peaceful. And after they started taking over these banks, his message changed to, no, the tent city will end. It will come to a close. But he didn't say when. And at some point, a deadline will have to be set. I mean, at some point, enough is going to be enough. And, you know, this is separate from the right to protest. I mean...
Well, I agree. And it's we're getting toward the end of our time here. So it's like, oh, you damn clock. I could talk to this man for an hour. So I'll tell you what. Let's do this. If somebody wants to hear more, they want to, you know, see some of your message, they want to interact, they want to donate to the cause, whatever, hear more about you, where do they go?
electjason.ca. All my contact info is there. Facebook, Twitter, Google+. It's all online. And please reach out to me. Send me an email. Let me know what your concerns are. I don't want to be a check mark on a ballot box once every 3 years. I want to be part of the community. I want to put myself out there. And I'm really passionate about working with people collaboratively to solve our problems.
His name is Jason LaMarche. He's running for Vancouver City Council. And it's really a pleasure to have you on Queer FM.
Thank you so much, Aiden. It was my pleasure.
Okay, we are out of here for Queer FM Community.
I'm so voting based on the fact that he used to skateboard.
Oh, well.
The puppies thing gets my vote. So.
So there you go. So you've got some endorsements here at Queer FM.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for coming in. And that wraps it up for 1 hour, Queer FM Community. We are going to step aside here and... Wow, what are we going to do here? What should we do? We should play some PSAs and we should get on with our theme music.
Push the button.
So I'm pushing the button right now.
This upscale pub, featuring lots of dark wood, a cool bar with your favorite ales on tap, and friendly servers, is a great place to hang with friends or to, maybe, make a new one. If you've only got time to stop in for a quick lunch, you'll be happy to see the menu featuring standard pub fare at reasonable prices. Sit inside or head out to the covered patio to indulge in one of the best things about Davie Street, cruising. Or, for you shy types, people watching.
The Fountainhead Pub at 1025 Davie Street. Open Sunday to Thursday from 11 a.m. to midnight.
Or drop by from Friday to Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. Cheers.
Change the scheme, alter the mood. Electrify the boys and girls, if you'd be so kind.
This can't be good. What am I supposed to do?
Survive.
Yeah.